Welcome to the Beyond Sunday at WMPC Podcast, where each week we're having fun exploring the deep cuts and melodic refrains of our faith through the Taylor Swift songbook. For Presbyterians, music and worship is more than a simple soundtrack. It's our song, a theology we all sing together. So listen now as Director of Music, Eric Wall, Associate Pastor for Faith Formation and Worship Ministries, Greer Booker Richards, and Associate Director of Music and Worship Arts, Eric Nans, talk about music's role and purpose in worship, and how our faith often finds its voice in song.
Well, welcome everyone. We are excited to be back for episode 5, and I gotta say, I am especially looking forward maybe to this episode with one of our newer staff members, Eric Wall, and also joining us, Eric Nans, who you all have heard from before. And we're here to talk about the role and sort of theology of music and worship. And of course, we have Taylor Swift helping us to kind of on-ramp the conversation. But before we sort of start off, since Eric Wall is still a new name and face for a lot of you to get to know as our new director of music, Eric, would love to hear a little bit about your story, how you got here.
Sure. And to all the listeners out there, this is your chance to see if you can tell which Eric is talking purely by the sounds of our voices. So good to be here with you all. And it's good to be at White Memorial, which has been now, I guess, more or less 2 months on the ground, 2.5 months on the ground. By the time you all hear this, before Mary and I moved here, I was for nearly 10 years on the faculty at Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary in Austin, Texas, where I was what's called the Dean of Chapel, which is the person who oversees campus worship life, which for me included music, but also was liturgical prep, supervising student chapel assistants, supervising the space, the whole arc of that. And of course, many of you know that I work in the summers at Montreat Conference Center with summer worship there and the summer staff choir and many things in that place, which is really a hub of the church. And so that those have been some of the places to which I've been called before the call to White Memorial came along.
And Montreat is where Eric Nans and I first got to know you.
That's right. We over the years at the Worship and Music Conference and other places, so it's been a real joy to be day in, day out colleagues these past several months, not just once or twice a year passing by the lake.
For sure. That's right. Can you describe for us, I feel like a lot of times we talk about sense of call and what we're talking about is pastoral vocation, but our theology definitely affirms a sense of call for all of us towards and for lots of things. And I was just wondering what initially attracted you maybe here and what a little sense of your journey and sense of call to this particular place at this particular time.
That's a great question. And I'll start in responding to that by saying that what you say that call is a vocational thing that's not only pastors, I think that's so true. And it is both cliche, which means that it's often true because cliches always have some grounding and some kind of truth, mm-hmm. The issues people imagine between pastors and musicians or issues related to artistic temperament of musicians and other artists, for all of those sometimes conflicted moments, which I have been so lucky in my career and vocation really not to have had, one of the things I think that pastors and musicians share more than anything else is exactly this sense of call, because pastors and artists both know what it is to be claimed by something beyond yourself. You have this thing that you have to do. You can't not do it. You can't ignore it. You can't look away from it. And it does not fit into the boundaries of so-called work hours. It doesn't fit into prescribable patterns of life. It can be a consuming thing. And that's what pastors know what that is, and musicians certainly know what that is. And in terms of the call here, I think the call here was a few seeds that were planted, one or two of them by Greer, sitting to my right here. By knowing many of you all on staff already, by conversations with Christopher, by knowing past musicians here at the church, and by what seemed to me to be a rich and multi-layered music and worship life. There are churches that I've known of that have, for lack of a better way to say it, different kinds of services. And those don't always sit well alongside one another or coexist. And it's
maybe they're not intended to.
And they may not be intended to. But one thing that was kind of remarkable to observe from a distance and then to confirm day in, day out here is how well these different ways of worshiping, these different rooms, these different staff members, et cetera, all go together and overlap and have that willingness to a fluid intermixing. That's because that kind of expansive range has become really foundational to me vocationally. And so that's a joy to find in a place like this.
And I think that's something that the three of us here all have in common, is a really high value and a sense of call to what we're doing and what makes our colleagueship special. And so Eric, Nance, give us a little reminder maybe of how you got here. We have heard a little bit from Eric Wall, but remind us again of like your trajectory.
Yes, growing up, I felt that consuming love for music at an early age, and I knew coming through middle school and then out of high school that I had to do something with it. I ended up studying classical guitar at James Madison University and taught for about 4 years in the DC area afterwards. I had grown up in the Presbyterian Church and always imagined working in the church, and after having those 4 years teaching music, I started to feel the tug and the call to bring my music in to church work, and an opportunity arose to be a director of youth ministry at a church in Fort Myers, Florida. But part of that particular call was going to be to help them kind of blend the one traditional service that they had. And so my wife and I lived in Fort Myers for 7 years, working at a Covenant Presbyterian Church, Fort Myers, before taking the call to be here.
And now here we all are.
Yes, and welcome, Eric.
For sure.
Good to be here.
Yeah, and so the title of our podcast today is Our Song, which is a throwback to one of Taylor Swift's very early songs, way back from her country era, 2009, when she was a teenager, I think, if I can sort of do the math correctly. And it is, you know, kind of a sweet little country song about a budding relationship where this couple doesn't have a song yet together. And so they take these relatively ordinary moments. I was listening to the song earlier. They talk about the slamming of the screen door, just sounds from ordinary life to help create and transform these ordinary moments into something memorable. We might, with our language, say sacred, that there are these things that happen in relationship that, you know, come to sort of be the soundtrack of our lives. And so these episodes, of course, are not about unpacking Taylor Swift song lyrics or song titles, but using them as a gateway to talk about something more meaningful and relevant, hopefully, to all of our lives of faith and ways we think about kind of what we're doing and why. And so I wanted to start off, Eric, well, we'll start with you. And Eric, Nance, feel free to jump in. So how is it that the songs of our faith, and when we say that, we often mean hymnody. We can also mean other songs. Maybe you can help us distinguish the difference. How do these songs in worship, these songs that help to kind of construct and define relationship we have with God and being a community of faith, become sacred?
Yeah, what a great question. I think there are several answers to that occur to me, and one of them is precisely in the Taylor Swift title, that one thing that makes songs, music, other artistic expressions. Sacred for us is that they really, we think of them in various ways as our songs. They are acts of community. We feel a sort of communal, both a personal and communal ownership. Because they become embedded in, attached to, woven into these rituals that we do together. They become simply associated with a time and a place and a room and a practice and symbols that are on the wall and all those ordinary things. There, every church has its version of the creaking and slamming screen door. Mm-hmm. Every church has its version of curtains in the window and smells of food and all those things that make things sacred. So that's one way. Another way, of course, is that music in the church is attached to what we think of as sacred texts. They carry the language of prayer. They carry the words of the Bible. They carry the words of the rituals that we do. And so those lend meanings to those. And those meanings of those word meanings and symbolic meanings can become very fused to the sounds of that music, to where the music takes on, you sometimes can't tell where the meanings of the words and the meanings, the acquired meanings of the music, where one stops and the other begins. Music without words isn't representational. Music doesn't mean in and of itself a cross or a communion table or water, or it becomes associated. And once those associations are there, and we all know that, we do not easily unassociate. And so both the textual, ritual, symbolic attachment of music, as well as our own communal, emotional history attachment, those things make music sacred. Or another word that we sometimes think of, a similar word, but sometimes synonyms just inflect meaning. We think of music as sacred. We also think of it as holy. Mm. And those words mean more or less the same thing, but they have different shadings to me. So I think those are ways in which which music is holy and sacred.
Definitely. And can you help us define what's the difference between hymn and song, or what makes hymn unique?
I mean, it's interesting. I heard a conversation once. There's an organization called the Hymn Society in the United States and Canada. It's a national, two-nation national organization. And I know somebody had a conversation with me in which they said that the name of that organization was becoming more complicated than it used to be because of what the word hymn suggests. The word hymn at its origins, of course, just means a song of praise. But
To God.
But what we think of more specifically in terms of music in the church, we might think of the sound of the organ. We might think of hymns and stanzas or verses. We might think of a certain musical style or flavor. We're not in a room with a keyboard, but if we were, there'd be ways to play differences of those. So I think we think of hymns. You think of, O God, our help in ages past, come thou fount of every blessing, how firm a foundation, be thou my vision, these kinds of things. A mighty fortress, we're clear that certain things are hymns. Other things don't seem to move that way. They don't seem as music to have the same shape or form or flavor or instrumentation or the same kind of formalities or poetries of language. And so they may seem a little more casual or open-ended or easygoing or whatever. And I tend to more and more use hymn and song as interchangeably as possible. I try to say as much as I can hymns and songs, or songs and hymns, because I think it's helpful to us to let the word hymn have the meanings that it has, but also not let it restrict our imagination to what's possible in worship.
And what about you, Eric Nance? Yeah, I'd love to know. Eric, Wall was talking about, for lack of a better word, maybe stigma that's sometimes associated with hymnody, that it has to be a certain form or ought to sound a certain way and should maybe have an organ. Well, we don't have a pipe organ in Main Hall, and we do have hymn books, but we also have screens, and we have differing instruments regularly in that space and for that service that the sanctuary does not ordinarily have. And yeah, I would love to know more from you about sort of what, how hymnody and song function in On Point.
Yes, when I think about, you know, defining a hymn, if that's kind of the goal to try to do, there are, you mentioned the word forms, or there's kind of particular ways that I think songwriters know how to go about crafting melodies in ways that the phrasing is predictable, very easy to learn, and in a lot of ways it's kind of like the music supports the text rather than perhaps the other way around, which you might find in a lot of pop music. But there are some, yeah, kind of technical elements that you could always nerd out about and kind of learn the music theory that I think are fascinating.
You know, I love that.
And do seem to work really well for congregational singing. And so I think one of our great joys, and I do say our because you and me do this a lot, and now that Eric Wall's here, we find ourselves in these kind of creative spaces too, but, you know, how do you take a hymn that for so many decades and sometimes even centuries has worked one particular way, but to kind of recraft it for the folk instruments that we have. And a lot of these beautiful, beautiful texts and beautiful melodies you can still preserve while rearranging the chord structures so that it fits better for banjos, mandolins, and guitars rather than the organ. And so that's one of the things that I love about the service, and one of the things that kind of drew me here.
Yeah, and one of our deep commitments with the On Point service is that this is, like Eric Wall was saying, it is another expression of worship here. It is not the other expression of worship here, where there is absolutely a commitment to preserving tradition and ritual and our songs of the past that have shaped those who have come before us and will continue to shape generations, while also not limiting ourselves to a corpus of, you know, a corpus of music that has its particular time stamp, and, you know, in some ways is more representative than the hymnal before, but, you know, is missing a few because time passes and new things are written. And you alluded to kind of the creative process, and I'd love to hear from both of you. Yeah, how do you go about selecting music for worship?
Yes, for me, I suppose that's a joyful and fertile process of discerning and imagination. For me, it is grounded in two or three things. Most of all, whatever the scripture text for a given Sunday is, everything is rooted in that. One thing I say, I've said in classes or workshops or something, that I see my role as a church musician not first and foremost as one of working out of the sermon, but first and foremost working out of the text. In that sense, musicians and pastors do the same work. They are working out of a text. They're also working out of an occasion, which might be a liturgical season or a liturgical day. And they're working out of the liturgy, what the movements of the liturgy are, what the elements of the liturgy are. And so selecting music for me means living with a biblical text and reading it, most helpfully reading it in community, which is what a lot of us on staff have been doing for the past several months. On Monday mornings, we have these great gatherings where we just sit and talk text and we talk text without decision making first and foremost.
That's the best part.
We just read, whatever the preaching text is 3 weeks down the line, and just say to each other what we heard. And out of that, sometimes songs immediately suggest themselves, and sometimes that just needs to bake and marinate for a while, and songs arise. One of the kind of mental images I have that is sometimes helpful to me is to imagine like the old overhead transparencies, clear piece of paper, and on one of them you have whatever the scriptural texts are for the service, and on the other you have the order of the liturgy, and you just lay them down on top of each other and see where they talk to each other and where they intersect.
That's a really helpful visual.
Because, you know, there are some songs or hymns or instrumental music that suggests itself for confession or for communion or for ascending or for beginning. And so for me, it's sometimes I know certain pieces of music that I'd love to do in church, but most often I would say it's what is the text saying? What is the liturgy saying? What do the people need to do in worship? I sometimes go so far just for the sake of image making to say that I don't really think there are any moments of in one way there are no moments of worship that are musical. They're just moments of liturgy, and we do prayer, we do scripture reading, we do sending, we do commitment, we do communion. And sometimes we do them with music, and sometimes we do them with words only, and sometimes we do them in other ways. And so I'm looking for music that lets the liturgy happen and come to life in our voices and in beautiful ways.
Yeah, that way of helping text to have voice. And however text is having voice, we have the sort of holy privilege of getting to do some of that work of letting her voice be what it is called to be. And that reminds me that a few weeks ago, we had two sort of really interesting things happening in both worship spaces. In On Point, we had the offering and the congregational singing of Blowin' in the Wind by Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple weeks before that, over in the sanctuary, we had the choir singing a Dolly Parton song. And help our listeners through, because you all have done a great job of helping us kind of understand hymnody and song and letting the text speak. How do songs like those get chosen for worship, programmed to curate a way of letting scripture speak? While there is a corpus of other popular Christian music, top 40 if I turn on the radio, that, you know, maybe I'm imagining some of our listeners really like and enjoy, we don't tend to hear those as much. So, like, help us understand maybe why a Bob Dylan and a Dolly Parton on two particular Sundays are sort of making it in terms of their voice giving rise to song that we're singing, yet there are others, you know, who the industry labels as Christian artists producing a certain flavor and brand of music that you might hear on the radio that is called Christian music that we don't hear. I think, honestly, that's confusing for people. I think it's confusing to try and explain to people. So help us out.
Yeah, so one of the things that Eric Wall brought to us right from the beginning was the suggestion that we meet on Monday mornings as a kind of a pastoral and music team, which tends to be like
communications
is there. Yep. It's about 10, 12 of us any given Monday. And that has been a very fruitful time for us as a
and
new,
we meet in the chapel. I think that's,
yeah, we always start helpful. with a song and a devotional. It's a really beautiful way to start the week. But more importantly, I think has helped all of us to really dive into these texts, because as Eric Wall was saying, I mean, that's so much at the core of worship planning and when you're selecting music. And I remember that specific day, we were looking ahead 3 weeks, Judy was going to be preaching, and she was telling us about, kind of teaching us about liminal space and how we all feel like we're in a liminal space right now, and sometimes it's can be an anxious space. And there was something about just the nature of that conversation we had that day, all those tough questions in the Bob Dylan song, Blowin' in the Wind, just popped into mind. And so to me, I always try to honor those movements of the spirit. And while that is, technically not a sacred song, I would absolutely call it a sacred song because it's so clear to me that it came from a sacred place. And so sacred music to me certainly can include the secular music. But in terms of why not select maybe a contemporary Christian song in its place, sometimes I would. There wasn't anything that seemed to hit that point any better, at least from songs that I know. I do find that a struggle that I can have with contemporary Christian music is the themes that they tend to sing about are not very vast. They tend to sing a lot about your individual relationship with God, not a lot of communal language. There's a lot of, being saved, the death on the cross, a lot of kind of salvation story texts. And there's a time and place for those, but because of the way that we read through Scripture, go through the lectionary, and all the different themes that we find ourselves in any given Sunday, it can be hard to draw a lot from contemporary Christian.
That's helpful. And you and I have a lot of these conversations when we're kind of piecing and curating and imagining and dreaming of worship. And we place the same scrutiny on, traditional hymnody as well, is there are some songs musically that if you adapt and adjust in certain ways, instrumentally and otherwise, can really come alive and work. And we can hear them in a different way that seems more, consistent, I guess, with kind of where the space that's been created and on point and sort of the flavor and ethos of that. And there are some good old hymns that people would love to hear, and we read through the text and we have to say there's just some problematic stuff here, and whether it's contemporary Christian music flavor that was written yesterday or a good old favorite written hundreds of years ago, we are responsible for sort of asking those questions. Eric, what about you?
Yeah, this is it's such a great thing to talk about. I think the question of these kinds of songs, Bob Dylan, Dolly Parton, and others, I have a colleague who refers to those as sacred adjacent.
I love that.
Which is kind of another version of what Eric was saying. We all know the reality in the music we listen to, the things which stir us deeply, no matter what they are. And they call up something in us that feels a little more transcendent or a little...
And they're different.
And they're different. And they open us to mystery or beauty or existential questions or past, present, and future. The case of the Dolly Parton song, Light of a Clear Blue Morning, in an arrangement, a really wonderful arrangement for choir, and many of you may have heard it. Rest assured, we'll do it again. It so happened that the text that day, interestingly, was the text for preaching was the rich Lazarus at the gate of the rich man, and the rich man who overlooks Lazarus, and then they both die, and Lazarus is in the bosom of Abraham, and the rich man is in torment, and there's this cosmic conversation and seeing one another across vast spaces where there wasn't a seeing of one another in the earthly life. And somehow or another, another side or another echo of that text to me seemed to be this song, which keeps returning to the language of I can see this that will be better. I can see the light. I can see this. I can see this. So sometimes you are those songs play not, they don't have the ability to play off something necessarily specifically theological or specifically biblical, but they do have the ability to play off some kind of theme or image or human existential reality that is vibrating in that text.
They're still giving voice.
They are giving voice. And, you know, and that phrase, I would say, would lead me to sort of reflect on every musician, or really every person, all of you listening and all of us talking and any of us this, we have in our own different ways and spheres, even if you don't think about it, you've got some kind of musical repertory that you are carrying around with you. You may not be a practicing musician, but you probably have some kind of a playlist, some kind of repertory, some kind of radio station, some kind of whatever that houses some mental, emotional collection of songs or music that is attached to you in different ways. And then, of course, there are other playlists and styles and genres and whatever that you don't know. And that's true for the two Erics in this room and every other church musician. We come with our own repertories. We come with our own skill sets. We come with our own training. We come with our own
biases.
Our own pieties. Our own prayer life and theological lenses and histories.
Just as preachers do.
A preacher can only preach out of who they are.
That's right.
A preacher cannot take on the tone of voice or the personality or the manner of speaking or the all those intangibles of another preacher. It would be inauthentic. And musicians do their work out of who they are and what they know. And that's going to inevitably leave some other music out just because either we don't know it or it doesn't fit in our skin as well as other music. And which is not always a judgment on other music. It's just simply who we happen to be.
Yeah. So if someone comes, here's the Q&A part. I'll start, Eric Nans, with you, then I'll just throw it over to you for the same question. If a congregation member comes and they say, Eric, this is just my absolute favorite song, would you program this for worship? How do you respond?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's never happened exactly like that, though I do get song suggestions all the time, and I'm thankful for them. Sometimes I find songs that I just love listening to. Sometimes I find songs that I can use in worship. But if someone were to ask that specifically, I would say I would certainly take a listen to it and reflect on the lyrics as it relates to our worship planning, but I certainly would not make a promise to anyone about programming any song.
What would you say?
I would say almost exactly that answer. I think I might also say, depending on the amount of time, tell me why it's your favorite. Tell me about your history of this, and I'm glad to take a look at it. No promises, but it's good to know what's of value.
Yeah, and what matters to you.
Yeah,
what you're thinking about. And so to start to wrap things up, how would you all sort of describe ultimately, I know this is a big question, but just take a stab at it, music's role and power in our experiences of corporate worship?
Yeah, that is a big question.
And I would say that comes from a place of maybe, you know, not everyone thinks of themselves as being musical. I can imagine plenty of people thinking you could have a worship service and just pray and read scripture and hear someone preach, and then you could leave, and maybe somebody's playing an instrument on your way out. And that's one way of worshiping. But what would you all sort of say, maybe to someone coming from that space, but not necessarily, what makes it valuable?
I would share what I know is true for me, which is music helps me engage with the liturgy, with the entire service, more than if there was a service without music. And that might not be true for everyone, and that's okay. Certainly there are lots of different ways to worship, but for me, it's always going to be the most engaging way to worship.
I think I would say that you're asking what it is that music does particularly that something else can't do.
Yeah.
And I think music, it maps an inner emotional, psychological place that maybe words don't always do. It's an opening to mystery and beauty and transcendence and sometimes things that are inexplicable. It's doing what words can't do, and it helps give flavor and expression, and it transforms how we experience time. And it is a way in worship. For one of the challenges I make to people, so I'll just say this to anybody listening. If you find that an inner narrative, whenever we find that we have an inner narrative that says things like my voice isn't good enough, I don't know how to do this, I'm not trained in this, it's not my gift, it's really helpful for us to try to find newer, better, deeper narratives, because if we say that, we were probably told by somebody, a teacher, a friend, whoever, when we were young, to be quiet, not to sing as loud. I say it to myself about art, you know, about visual art and drawing and so forth. That, and one of the things music offers us, it's a theological offering that that actually our voice not only matters, but is needed, you know, and that we have the ability to take part in this, that we have the ability to be captivated by something beyond us and to be strengthened by other people's voices. So when we said earlier, it's a way that texts, whether scriptural, liturgical, come to life, it's also a way our own voices come to life and the way the community's voice comes to life.
To quote our friend David Lamont, who was just here doing a seminar and a concert, we were in a class this summer with him, and he said, everyone's musical. Put your hand over your heart. You feel that rhythm? And it was just such a simple, succinct way to remind us that we are made musical beings.
Musical beings.
We're all operating rhythmically.
Yeah. Beautiful. Any final thoughts that you all were wanting to share?
I wish everyone could see that Eric and I are so connected through music that we are wearing the exact same color green shirt.
That you know, you can't make that up. We're a good team.
Twinning to
we're
a
really
whole
cool.
new level.
Yeah. We're really yeah. cool.
That's right. So the very first time that Eric Nans and I recorded a podcast, which I think was last summer, mm-hmm. I gave him at the end a little surprise. One of my favorite, well, really one of my favorite people. I've never met her, but in my mind, we're best friends. Brené Brown, amazing professor, author, and podcaster herself. And she ends every one of her podcasts with the same 10 questions for every one of her guests. And we're not going to do 10. We're going to do 7. Eric Nans only got 5. You're getting 7.
Pressure's on.
I know. But these are the same ones, some of them that I asked Eric Nans. So you haven't seen these, right?
I have not seen these. No.
You're nervous. I can tell. And the idea is I'm going to ask the question and whatever comes to your mind first.
Okay. Well, do my best.
There you go. All right. What is one part of your job that you have really come to appreciate since joining us this past summer?
Since joining you this summer, I have come to appreciate all our staff conversations, especially over lunch.
Yeah. How old were you when you started playing organ?
Organ, I was in 7th grade, so 12 or 13.
And one thing I actually learned from your predecessor, from Carl, is you really can't start too young because your feet have to be able to touch the pedals. I remember him saying.
That's right. I started piano in 3rd grade on the piano that sits in my office here at the church now.
I love that. When you're having a rough day, what is one thing you do that helps you to feel better?
Go for a walk or a bike ride.
Do you know what your colleague who also you supervise his answer? Take a nap, even if it's in the middle of the day.
Well, I'll try that too.
That's right. Is there a moment from a worship service here that you don't think you'll ever or will soon ever forget?
Oh, goodness. There's already been several. I think the children, All World Communion Sunday. I think when we sang, when the choir led and Rhonda led, Balm and Gilead back at the end of August, when we sang Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
There's some various moments when Jared sang Vaughn Williams in September.
Yes.
And they're all various moments in which it felt clear in the space that connectivity among the various people, the various locations in the space was palpable and more than anybody expected.
Awesome. When you were in middle school, what did you think you wanted to do when you grew up?
Oh, I wanted to be an orchestra conductor.
Oh, I love that.
How geeky can you get, right? So
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
This is a fill in the blank. The call of God sounds a whole lot like
singing.
Hmm. Last one. If someone were to go to Idle Hour, which is our favorite coffee shop right down the way, and they were to order the Eric Wall special, what would they receive?
They would get what is also the Greer Booker Richards special, which is the iced matcha with the something that you layer in. Yes.
Agave.
Agave, yes, which I never can remember.
Well done. What a joy this time has been. I hope that people get a sense of the true joy that it is to share in ministry together, and hope that people feel inspired to listen more deeply, to ask more questions, whether it is of the two of you in your positions as directors and associate director of music, but to really, you know, think about that relationship between what the music is doing and why it's here and where it might be guiding you. So glad you all listened, and thank you both.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Doing this, and thanks to you all for listening.